is a byword among scripture scholars that the world of the Bible, both the Hebrew Scriptures and the New Testament, is a pre-Freudian world. That is a world in which people did not understand life and themselves and each other the way we do today, which is largely in psychological terms. And I think that is really important because although it may be diminishing now, there was a period when there was an enormous pressure by a bunch of spiritual writers in the church to reduce religion to a kind of form of autotherapy, psychological therapy, and that's highly inadequate. And yet, having said all that, we run into this astonishing couple of lines from this equally astonishing first letter of John, which I'm going to talk about in more detail next week, where he or she enjoined, and we don't know who wrote this thing, could have been a woman, according to some scholars. He says, whatever our hearts condemn, God is greater than our hearts. In other words, the author is talking about a particular way of knowing oneself, of feeling about oneself. And I think he or she is hitting on some absolutely chronic part of the human condition, namely the sense of failure. I am not making it. In fact, I think you can argue that an awful lot of the bravado and violence in the world is a result of a conscious or unconscious attempt to deny that sort of self-awareness. Now, if I can say I'm okay and you're okay, and then I can go and bash about dauntless, you know. But I think in our quiet moments, and and this happens differently at every point in life. And when I think of where I am in my life at 67 and where I was at my life at 26 or 35, the phenomenon is constant, but it takes very different shapes at different stages in our lives. Or to take the worst part of it, when I'm about 14 or 15, when all you have is a sense that you're worthless, that your heart's condemning you in general about a sense of ineptitude or failure. But it is almost in the very nature of consciousness. You know, I can only be conscious of myself. I cannot be conscious of somebody else. And if my consciousness is filled with this kind of self-awareness, then it is not surprising then that you come up with this fairly dramatic formulation. And my heart is condemning me. My heart is condemning me. And I can look at instance after instance, area after area of my own life and say, I am not making it. I am not making it. I'm untrustworthy, don't keep my promises. I'm subject to the vagaries of moods or impulses. There seems to be no straight axis for my life often enough. Or often enough when I insist on there being a straight axis of my life, this is done over against the sense of failure, too, which, as I said, produces a real witch's brew of weirdness and inauthentic behavior. Our hearts do condemn us. I think that is a standard, that's the human condition. And we're not just saying, well, I can't play piano scales fast enough, or I can't dribble fast enough, or my computer skills are enough. We're talking about basic failures of me relating to other people, me being a real and authentic human being. I'm talking about sin. The problem, of course, in the very nature of consciousness, it seems that kind of awareness seems to enclose us. It's like that Edgar Allan Poe story, remember, in the room where the walls keep getting closer and closer and closer, and the ceiling gets, and the floor keep coming closer and closer to each other. You feel like you're being squished by life. And out of that, all kinds of awful behavior, as I said, can arise. Because it's just, I just know myself. There seems to be no way out of my self-knowledge. It encloses me. It imprisons me. And it does it in different, as I said, at different stages. And one of the beauties of growing older is that you can distinguish where some of that self-assessment is neurotic, but then you also get closer to the grain of where you really are, something of a failure. When our heart condemns us, God is greater than our heart. That's what he's getting at. In other words, that sense of entrapment we have in my own past, or my understanding of my past, is not ultimate, is not determinative. But I exist beyond my own self-consciousness. I exist in the presence of, surrounded by, that mysterious other we call God, in whom we live and move and have our being. That's what faith is about, of course. But again, to finish this, and I don't think I'm flogging this in some kind of brute force way. I mean, that's wilderness. That's to put yourself into wilderness again. Because at least, even if I'm trapped inside my own head, my own head says, Trojak, you're a mess. At least it's I who am a mess, and I who can determine all this stuff. There's still this kind of sick self-possession in that sort of awareness. And what this view of life, but he's not just writing words, he's talking about some kind of larger experience, the experience of faith, that is not final, that is not ultimate. That past can be dissolved. Those failures can somehow be redressed. There is a way forward. There is something larger, in other words, than my own self-assessment. But you see, it has to break down that sense that, well, at least I'm still master of my own fate, master of my own self. No. We're called into the wilderness of reaching out in the darkness to that mysterious other who is greater than our hearts, greater than our self-condemnation, more benign in taking me up into herself than I would allow.